You don't start cutting insurances until you're at the level of providers that you want to have.
Welcome back to the Millennial Dentist Podcast, a podcast all about working smarter, not harder, pushing dentists to go beyond dental school dentistry and build the practice of your dreams. Here is your host, the millennial dentist himself, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. I am super stoked to be here with you today. Hot take today. Lots of hot takes. Here's my hot take. We've got to get rid of this idea that insurance is the problem and that everybody needs to figure out how to get out of network as fast as they can because it's holding you back. And I think, frankly speaking, dropping all insurances is some of the worst advice that we could give to the majority of docs out there. Super pumped about it today. It'll be a fun conversation to have. Remember, just so you know, you should come check us out at 3D Dentist this year. If you're not, if you haven't already, I mean, if you like this podcast, like, why wouldn't you want to hang out with us in person? Mastermind is essentially full for 2024. So we are booking out for 2025. So that's what you want to really get involved in because it's really fun. And that starts in January, a year from now in 2025. So go ahead and make that happen. Plus you can get like a monthly payment plan for like 2 years. And so you won't even know it costs any money. Oh, the other thing I'm supposed to remind, the summit. Thank you. That's important. That is in May, Cinco de Mayo, right around there, Nashville, Tennessee, our second annual practice growth summit. So if you're like, hey, I'm not quite ready for that kind of big commitment, but I want to do something fun, go to Nashville with the team, please come to the summit. Okay, let's jump into this. So this all started with me hearing a podcast, seeing a Facebook post on December 21st, and I'm like done with work at this point for Christmas. So I was like, well, I got nothing better to do to sit here and have a battle, essentially. And the post was from Lance. Lance seems like a great guy. Here's how to drop Delta when they are 60% of your practice. And so, you know, it's kind of like clickbait, right? Like, here's how you drop Delta when they are 60% of your practice, dot, dot, dot. So then I started to read. Okay. So then I'm like, okay, well, let's kind of see what this is all about. Let's see if this is, you know, if this is good advice. So Lance says, hey, this is what I did to do. This is what I did, but do works for you. I appreciate that part. I'm now 1 year out of network and a happier. They were 60% of my patient base. Now, what I want to point out is I think that's a great comment because what he really states in the first thing is I'm 1 year out of network and I'm happier. So for him, it's the right call because on some level, there needs to be a happiness part of this that's important. But I'm going to look at this not only from a happiness standpoint, but also from a strategic standpoint and a growth standpoint, and that at the end of the day, money doesn't buy a lot of things. It doesn't buy happiness, but it does buy a lot of stuff. And so I want to do something, and I'm willing to get over some level of unhappiness if it helps grow my business and provide some layer of income. So he says, I've been considering it for a few years, but drug my feet because I was premier only. The final straw was when I wanted to bring in an associate and was told they would need to be dealt a PPO. So he said, step one is establish a practice where patients want to be your patient. Be nice, have a nice facility, have a nice staff, aka team, show you care. It takes a year or two to do this and probably will have much higher loss if you don't have an established patient base. So first and foremost, I will say, I'm going to kind of go pro con, what I agree with, what I don't agree with, and then we'll sum this up in some parts, I guess, of my general thoughts on everything. I think there's a lot of valid points in there. You know, when you want to go out of network and you want to say, hey, I want you to keep coming to me despite the fact that you have free money somewhere else or more free money somewhere else based off the, you know, the discounted rates and stuff like that. That's obviously important and some level of a no-brainer. The reality, though, is that where I'm going to disagree with this is that works for a percentage of your existing patient base. What that doesn't work for is any patient base that's not yet to you. Meaning you don't get to learn to like me or like my facility or like my people if I never get the at-bat for that to happen. So at-bats is something we'll talk about why I believe that being in network with dental insurance for most people is important. Step two, be prepared to see a decrease in collections. I was mentally prepared to lose 50% of Delta patients and a 35% reduction in collections. I think that's good advice in that being prepared to that. But again, I don't love any sort of decision that's going to drop or reduce my collections by 35%. And I also don't think it has to be that way. I think if you do it strategically, and you've got the right setup, in theory, you can drop insurances at the appropriate time by not losing that stuff. So we'll talk about that as well. You drop the shittier, smaller plans first. You build a cushion of fee-for-service and better network plans. You know, some people do membership plans, yada, yada, yada. That's fine. Get to a point 6 months before, and then and we're saturated, working like a dog. Also had a bad hygiene. I knew I needed to fire. Wasn't going to replace. So I stopped accepting new Delta patients that called. Again, I definitely don't like the idea of stopping any new patients that come. Again, like, new patients are the lifeblood to practice growth and me being successful. So I don't like the idea of not seeing new patients. That's like rule number one is new patient blocks. And then this might be well be step one, but you know, you get tired of it. All the mandated stuff, blah, 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 blah. You know, I don't know. Ultimately what happens here is there's a straw. You get ticked off and you make an emotional decision and you got a network. Now, again, he's happier. I'm happier for him, but I do want to talk about some of the ramifications. And then look, I'm not trying to point out this is a right or wrong decision for him. I'm just trying to have more constructive conversation that's not emotional about the ramifications of what it can look like or not look like to a practice. That's ultimately my intention. So, okay, so what he says, he wraps this up and says, and the last one, step nine, don't take it personally and wish patients well. Leave the door open for them to come back. And that I agree with, because some patients are going to leave and then they may come back after they experience what else is out there. And you can't take it personally that you've been more loyal to these people because they took your insurance. So I agree with that on that standpoint. Now, he wraps this up and says, we lost about 30% of the Delta patients, but have been seeing quite a few come back after one appointment elsewhere. We went down about 20% collections for the first 3 months, but only down 4% for the year, and much less hectic and headaches. I also cut 2 hygiene days. Write-offs from the year went significantly down, obviously 270,000 to 60,000. And I was afraid of having patients pay up front would be a huge deterrent, but it wasn't. Balance billing and trying to get Delta check on out of network is a nightmare, and I would discourage that path, even though I knew we want to make it easy on patients and their finances. So a couple things here. One, what I don't like is we're praising how great this is, yet we were down 4% for the year. I don't know about you all, but like I don't call that a financial success. And again, I'm not being disrespectful. I don't want to say it, but I'm calling a spade a spade. Like I'm in the business of growing a practice, not and again, that's the framework, right? The framework of this is that I think that if you're in growth mode or you're trying to grow your practice or be more successful in like a money region, this is a bad decision. Obviously, he's down 4%. The other part of it is it stunts growth because I also cut 2 hygiene days. So now I can't employ someone less. I may have to move someone to part-time. Then if I can't offer a full-time job, maybe I lose an employee. I'm in the business of trying to grow people and grow opportunities. So like, I don't want to cut down that. And then the other part of this is what they would clearly say is balance billing and trying to get the Delta check out of network is a nightmare. And I would discourage that path, even though I know we want to make it easy on patients and their finances. And so my point is that even when you go out of network, people, you still have to necessarily deal with insurance unless you're going to go fully fee for service where you don't even bill for the patients now, or you do that aspect of it where you're not just collecting everything up front, which then is even going to put another wedge into patients. And by the way, we're moving into a time and place, I don't know if you're feeling this or not, where like it is getting harder and harder and harder to get patients to say yes to dentistry because it's a tougher economic times in the surrounding area. We're going into an election year. There's a lot of unrest, unnoticed. Like now is not the time, in my opinion, to be making it to where more patients have to pay out of pocket up front. Like I just don't want to do that. So then naturally people start saying like, oh, this is great. Like blah, 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 blah. And then I come in and I'm kind of like there's 285 comments. So you can go read them if you want. In this thread post. But I say, so I have a couple follow-up questions now that I got fired up. Which practice do you want? Both practices have a 60% overhead. Do you want a $2 million practice that's insurance-based or a $1 million fee-for-service practice? $2 million insurance, $1 million fee-for-service, they both have the same overhead. Because at some level, that's what this person's saying, is that what happens is that when I cut out my insurance, I'm going to limit the patient flow in my practice. And when I limit patient flow, that has a negative impact on my collections. Because at some point, they run out of the dentistry or don't want to say yes to the dentistry. So now, so let's start looking at some big picture scenarios. Number one is at-bats. We've got to have at-bats to present comprehensive dentistry because most people won't say yes. If your case acceptance is 80% or 90%, it's too high. You're not truly presenting comprehensive dentistry. It's impossible. Most patients can't afford that, whether they have insurance or not. And most patients aren't interested in comprehensive dentistry. So in order to get to a level where you are starting to do more advanced and comprehensive style dentistry, you've got to have at-bats. Because whether they're fee-for-service or insurance, the majority of patients won't do it. So what you'll see in Sullivan Dental Partners is you'll see 80% of our patients probably have insurance. Probably 70% have, or 60%, probably 60-70% have an in-network insurance. Yet our collections is only 30% of our practice. So let me back that up. Again, 80% of our patients have insurance. Our 30% of our practice is actually insurance by collections. So what that tells you is that for every insurance dollar that the insurance pays, I'm not good at that kind of math, but you get what I'm saying, is that if the majority of the money that's coming into our practice isn't insurance-based, it's fee-for-service-based. It's just coming from the patients who got here by the nature of their insurance. It's the at-bat that is so important. And we can't just go out of network because then all of a sudden we're going to cut these down. Now, I'll talk about, as this episode goes on, when do we start dropping insurances? Because I'm not advocating by any means that you go in network with all insurance and you keep them forever. Gosh, no. But there is a rhyme or reason to when you do that. And I think for Lance, it may have been that case. Again, I'm not discounting what he's saying. I'm just trying to make a more advocated approach that I think is probably better for the masses who are in a position where they're still trying to grow their practices and or make more money. So someone that says to me, I've heard this argument many times over, but it's not the correct scenario. Offices don't change collections like that and keep the same overhead. I've had my office do $950,000 with 44% overhead after debt service and $1.75 million with 54% overhead after debt service. And it only went up by dropping insurances. The growth wasn't from dropping insurances, but gave me time focusing on improving aspects of office to reduce overhead. Now, here's where this could not be more wrong. If that was the case, why would any of these massive corporations that are unbelievably successful on the business standpoint, like all these DSOs, whether you like them or not, why do they take all these insurances? Because what they know is they can build a model that works within the confines of insurance, but they need the at-bats to get the people in, and that's how you scale a business. Because it's very, very difficult to scale a business to a fee-for-service environment. So this is going to bring me to really my second point of emphasis here. And my second point is that you cannot start to drop insurances until you're at the level of the providers that you want to have for the practice. Because again, as soon as you drop insurances, you're going to start to nuke the new patient flow that you've got. It's going to completely start to fall down because inevitably those patients are coming because they got you on the insurance. And so then all of a sudden you don't have the same volume of at-bats for new doctors. And so being able to scale in any sort of matter and grow your business gets slowed down significantly. So I'm a huge advocate that my general verbiage is that you don't start dropping insurance until you're at the level of the providers that you want to be. And so I said, well, my practice is an outlier then because it's not, but hear me out. I said, team overhead is the biggest practice expense. That's pretty obvious, I think, right? You may need 5 team members for one doc. You don't need 10 team members for two docs. So my point in this is that when you start to look at overhead, your biggest expense here is team. So for most solo doc practices, they're going to have somewhere between, say, 7 and 8 team members. I think that's pretty accurate. If they go to two doctors, now in theory, they have double amount of the potential production they can do with two providers because one can only produce so much. And if you've got a second one that can do the same, then it's double. I don't need double the team. So that's going to decrease my overhead pretty significantly relative to the overhead. And that's what we've seen has happened in our practice. Supplies should go down, right? Because in essence, I'm buying more. I have more power. The more volume I do, that's why again the DSOs get the discounts they do versus I get the discounts I do versus the one doctor gets the discounts they do. So when you do that, when you buy more, they should go down. The solo doc should also now have time to do more advanced procedures advanced procedures are more profitable because they lower the overhead, because they're less time. You know, you think about wisdom teeth, dental implants, root canals, ortho. Specialty type dentistry typically has lower overhead and is more profitable. And you have more time to do that by growing your practice with more doctors, because now all of a sudden I've got multiple doctors to carry the weight of that. And so again, I can't do that if I start to decrease, cut days off hygiene, cut my days off bat. Like, it makes no sense. I mean, these are, in my opinion, these are factual type things. So now what I did say is, I said, you are correct if you build a hygiene and bread and butter practice that only scales off volume. This is a really, really important fact, because what I'm not advocating is that you stay in network with all these insurances and you continue to just grow a hygiene-based practice and a bread and butter-based practice. Because in essence, what I'm getting at is, if you go back to an episode way back, not way back, but like maybe 10 or so ago, I talk about the value of an operatory. And all of us are limited in some level by the space of our buildings. And so if I only have so much square footage that when I say yes to someone saying yes to a crown for $800, I can't put somebody in there that would say yes to a crown for $1,400. So if I'm only going to scale or grow my business based off a certain volume of procedures that are typically bread and butter based and or hygiene based, then I'm going to be better off getting rid of those insurances and starting to grow in that way, because at that point, I'm not doing the dentistry that allows me, where I need at-bats. I'm just doing it after the volume of the hygiene coming through, which is not a really good way to grow a practice anyways. Then you have to be like Walmart, and you've got to grow huge or have tons of practices in order to do that. I say, but what dentists should be doing is what corporate is doing. What successful groups like myself, which I think we're doing something well, is we leverage insurance to grow large practices that are based off insurance. And again, I mentioned this earlier, meaning our patient base is 85% insurance, but our collections by insurance is only 30%. People come for their insurance, but they spend so much more. And then I love it. I got to give Adam props here. He says, great breakdown on the real economics here. The insurance witch hunt has never been based off solid advice, more offices, but rather than vocal emotions of a few that are unhappy. And I think that's the reality is, it's like, look, I don't like it any more than you that I have to fight to get a crown paid for, that they write off that stuff. And at the end of the year, you know, y'all want to complain about $200,000 in write-offs. We've got $1 million in write-offs. But it's all fake money, because without that insurance, that patient wouldn't be here. And so it's like, until I get to a volume that meets the providers that I'm at, again, go back to number one point, like take home point number one is, you don't start cutting insurances until you're at the level of providers that you want to have. Because what I've done and what I make the argument for, and this gets kind of into like, I guess, some level of an advanced part of the topic, is that as you scale and you say, okay, well, Sullivan Dental Partners is now at 6 doctors. And then I say, okay, well, I want to start dropping insurances. You don't just drop the insurance, you drop the insurance by provider. So now Sully is only a network with Delta, but our practice is a network with Cigna, Blue Cross, and Delta. So that if I'm going to be doing the dentistry on them, I get a higher fee than if maybe one of the associates is doing it, who's still trying to grow their book of business. What I don't want to do is, again, shut off the new patient flow of at-bats that gets here that feeds the general part of the practice. So not only do you not start dropping insurances till you get to the level of providers that you want to have in your practice, but then you strategically, start to drop off those by way of doing it in an appropriate manner that scales the most senior or advanced doctor as far as techniques and skill set goes, because those patients typically don't care about his insurance as much, because it's a less proportion. Let me explain that more. If you need a fixed hybrid denture that's $25,000, do you really care about your $1,000 in Delta Dental insurance? Like, I'll give you that. I'll give you the $1,000 off. I don't care. So my patient base doesn't typically care as much. If you're getting 6 crowns done, 10 veneers done, your $1,000 doesn't mean much. If you're living in a bread and butter, like, I don't present a lot of dentistry, I don't know how to close a lot of dentistry, I struggle to close more than $2,000-$3,000 at a time, where insurance is paying for 50 to 60 or 70% of the total cost of treatment, then yes, you should be worried, and that would be a challenge. And then, anyway, so kind of continue on this thread a little bit. I want to read some more posts. Jeff says, I'd argue that corporate needs to be in insurance networks as a way to get, try to get new patients away from locally owned practices that don't have docs fluctuating throughout all times. They would be at a disadvantage to be out of network in this solution. With all due respect to Jeff, I think we're putting a way too high of a value on ourselves. And I think we've done this from, you know, gosh, I'm a fourth generation dentist, and I hear my dad say stuff all the time, like our name means something or the legacy is important. And like, I'm not, please hear me out. My legacy is in our name. It means everything to me. I've just seen time and time again, a patient leave that was a 20-year patient, three-generation patient, because they didn't like that they had to pay for something, or they didn't like that we dropped their insurance. And so this loyalty to us is, in my opinion, very, very one-sided by and large. Now, I'm not saying there's not patients out there that are loyal to you. There absolutely are. But we overgeneralize significantly, in my opinion, the value that we have to our patient base outside of what we do as an industry. And that's that we're a dentist and that we clean their teeth and we fix their teeth. And that, yes, there are some friends, there are some family friends, but frankly speaking, I've seen the ones that are like, I remember one day, a patient that's been here for 15, 20 years, a long tenure patient. My dad actually saw this patient on Christmas Eve to fix a broken tooth one year. Well, I come in, yeah, I'm there. I'm the hard-headed or mean one or whatever. We start making them take x-rays. Can y'all believe this? We said, unfortunately, Mrs. Jones, we no longer going to be able to see you unless you take x-rays. Well, guess what happened? Stormed out, practices changing, yada, 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 left us like that. Went on Google, wrote a 1-star review, the whole nine yards. And so again, I disagree with this idea that corporate's doing it because they're so bad at dentistry that they suck so much that they got an ever-changing revolving door of doctors that they're doing it because the only way they get patients. Because it's just, that's just, like, we're not getting, y'all aren't getting fee-for-service patients come to you all the time. Like, guess what? They're coming to you because of your insurance. And look, I'm not saying there aren't outliers out there, but if you're in a busy community and you don't take insurance, like, I mean, Nashville's, you know, busy area. If you're in middle of nowhere, the advice may change. That's also part of the reason why I don't like these blanket statements on Facebook, because it's just not, I don't think it's the best for the majority. And the majority, the reality is we're not getting 30, 40, 50 new patients a month. And those of you that are like, hey, I'm booked out for 8 months. I don't want 30 new patients. You don't even, respectfully, I love you, but you don't even get it. You don't even get it. Because the new patient is the lifeblood of the practice. It's the lifeblood of the growth. It's the at-bat for the change. It's the new patient to take photos on, the new patient to talk about what you just learned. The existing patients will always be the ones that are challenging because we've trained them to be a certain way. And so every new patient is a new at-bat to do things in a new way and a new difference, and that's really important. And when you've got a patient that's been missing a tooth for 20 years and you've never talk to them about it, now you want to put an implant in there because you learned how to do it, that's way harder than the patient that just walks in the door that's new, that you can now say, hey, have you ever thought about replacing that missing tooth? And like, well, no, my previous dentist never talked to me about it. And now I can start to have a conversation about doing more advanced and comprehensive dentistry. So, you know, and I think most of these, I basically kind of say the same thing. And it all comes back to really what you're trying to do and where you want to scale to. And look, if Lance at the end of the day is comfortable being a one doctor practice, and that's where he's at his career, and he doesn't want to make more money, and dealing with a headache he's okay, then I'm fine with it. I just have a problem with this idea that if I go out of network all the insurances, I'm not going to have to deal with discomfort. And the reality is, y'all, that now I got to explain to the patient why I dropped their insurance. Now I got to explain to the patient why I don't take it, or like there's, or why the out of network didn't pay for them. And then they're like, there's always going to be some level of discomfort that happens with owning a business and running a business. Like, that's, I think, the reality of the story. And if you want to grow, because at the end of the day, if you're a solo doctor, which on some level, if we really want to get down to brass tacks, what I'm advocating is that I think that the solo doctor practice of the 90s and 2000s and kind of historical data is gone. And the reason I think it's gone is it's going to become very, very difficult to compete with. And you can maintain it for another 10, 15, 20 years. But the reality is that for the bulk of us that are early in our careers, that will get phased out. It's just going to be too hard to compete. You can't compete with the prices. You can't compete with the supply cost. You can't compete with the team, with the benefits the team's members get, all these things. And so, and frankly speaking, if you're a solo doctor practice, you own your job. Why go to the headache of all the stuff that you have to do as a business owner to own your job, to make 2 or 3% more than what you'd make if you were an associate? And for some of you, make more money or the same amount of money. You make no difference in money. And so what I'm advocating, what I really want people to do is to understand the need to, that the way we compete, the way we grow, the way that our industry will thrive moving forward is that we understand that group practice is important, that we need to mentor new doctors and bring them in. And so that when you get to the point where you're like, hey, I'm at capacity, my next step is to drop insurance, I would argue your next step is to start running this as a business and to bring in another provider to help grow the business. And maybe you get out of network, but then they take the in-network patients, or you stop doing the dentistry that it matters whether it's in-network or not, meaning you stop doing the fillings and the crowns and you move on to more advanced dentistry that's more rewarding, that's more profitable, and you grow your practice in that way so that you actually own a business where when you leave, that business still runs. Where you go on vacation, that business still runs. Like we sometimes as business owners don't understand the value of having something that can run and see patients and flourish when I'm not there. Versus like, and I y'all heard me say this, how, you know, my dad used to say like, well, the week between Christmas and New Year's is the busiest week of my year. And he had to work that. And I don't work that anymore because we've got people that are working, which is great. Yeah, here's a good point, I think. So Dan says, how many days does the insurance-based practice have to stay open every week to reach 2 million compared to the insurance-free practice? I'd rather manage a staff of 6 people instead of 10. That is required to pump the volume. How many more patients are seen per month to reach that compared to an out-of-network patient? Well, part of this is that, again, we're missing the point. If we're comparing bread-and-butter dentistry and we're comparing crown-to-crown fee, hygiene check to hygiene fee, then you're correct. It is a significant, it's double the volume. If a crown costs $800 with Delta and $1,600 is fee for service, and I only do crowns, then the only way to see that get the same amount of production is to do double. What I'm advocating, which most people aren't doing, is you're not getting as much out of the practice patient as you could be because you're investing your time in trying to cut costs or trying to figure out how to get around to insurances when you should be figuring out how to invest in your communication, your buying process, and your skill set. So that now I can take that same patient that I'm doing an $800 Delta crown on him and also do an implant, a root canal, an Invisalign. And next thing you know, I'm not actually seeing any more patients. Like what would blow most people's minds is that my associates who are in it, by the way, they are insurance-based associates, right? The majority of patients they see are insurance and they work one column. All our doctors here work one column, one chair. Sarah, we'll just call them A, B, and C. Associate A has been here 6 months. She averages 60 grand a month. Associate B, 1 year, 75 a month. Associate C, 3 years, 75 to 80 a month. Periodontist been here 6 months, 100 grand a month. So what I'm getting at is that most people don't even average those numbers in a non-insurance-based practice. And so, yes, if you're going to limit yourself to doing that type of dentistry, then yeah, absolutely. It is, but the message that people have got to hear is you're missing the boat on how to grow your practice. You don't grow your practice. You can grow your practice at some point by raising your fees, but that is an efficiency part of the process. You really don't do that until you've grown to the level of scale that you want to be at and are comfortable being at. Meaning, I get that most doctors don't want to be a 6-doctor practice like mine, but I think a 2-doctor practice is a great sweet spot. 3 doctors, pretty sweet too. And so then once you're at that point, once you've scaled to that level, then you can start to figure out what is the best way to become more efficient with the way that you handle. And at that point, raising fees by cutting insurance may make some level of sense. Oh, this was good. I like this. This will be my last thought and then wrap up because I want to keep them shorter. But I could kind of go on and on about this. And I hope this generates some follow-up conversation. Okay, Sonny says, Sully, are you at capacity at 2 million? And I was just using like a $2 million example practice. I said, one, I've been the $2 million insurance-based and I hated my life. I've now grown the fee-for-service practice, only have like 1,300 patients, and I'm at 1.5 million, but I'm loving it. I do the dentistry I enjoy. The problem is it's me-centric. Take home about the same. For fee-for-service, I also compensate my staff highly. They just got a bonus of $560 a month on top of top-tier pay, but it makes my life easier. So who knows? Overall payroll costs are about 28% before someone jumps at me. I'm fine with it. My wife's office, I personally believe, is easier to scale with insurance, and we want to add an associate full-time there. So a couple things here. Well, the first question is, I've been at $2 million insurance, you know, practice. Are you at capacity at that point? And my joke is, I'm never at capacity. I'm never at capacity. That's my mindset, because I said I'm never at capacity. I'll always add providers. So every time that I run into a capacity issue, that's just another, hey, you just need more providers, is my thought. And if you think about it, not only is there like the overhead and like yearly cost standpoint, but there's also like the sell aspect of this. Like an $8 million insurance practice is worth more than a $2 million fee-for-service practice. Like there's just like the numbers are what the numbers are. And I think the really important point that he makes is that now it's me-centric. And what I like to call this is being the hero of your practice. And I've talked a lot about this over the last couple of episodes, I feel like, but I'm trying to hammer this point home because I think a lot of people need to hear it, because we're just at a day and age where we really value this super GP, or I can do all of the weight on my shoulders. And the challenge there is you're the hero of the practice, and it's fully based off what you can do as a practice. So I said, here's what we do. We take insurance. I work 1 to 2 days a week clinically, and the other two I do, and I basically do 2 or 3 procedures. I drop my kid off. I pick him up from school. More of my income every day is made from owning a business than my hands doing it. My argument is, you are never at capacity. The whole problem with this discussion and argument is, dentists don't view themselves as owners. They view themselves as an employee. And this argument is dead on my end of things if you look at it from an employee's perspective. And if you have that view, then we'll always be better to take a higher fee than a lower fee. I'm here to help people that want to grow their business understand that their hands aren't the most valuable asset, but the brain is. And so I just want to kind of, again, recap some of this stuff. I'm not sitting here saying that you shouldn't ever drop insurance. I'm not saying that you should go and network with every insurance. I'm saying that when you talk about practice growth, at-bats are critical. New patient flow is critical. The best way to slow down a practice growing is to start cutting out the new patients. And if you take yourself out of network of all the insurances, you will naturally do that. If you don't have capacity to see these patients because you're booked out for 6 months in hygiene, that is the problem. You've got to have new patient blocks in your schedule. Go out right now, 6 months from now, and start adding new patient blocks. That way you'll never have to deal with this issue of, I don't have places to put people. You should always have a place to put people. Number two, we keep insurances till we're at the level of the providers that we want to be at, meaning we've reached the scale that we're comfortable at and want to be at. Only at that point then do we start to cut down on the insurances and talk about how we phase out of the insurances, because we reach the scale of the providers and we can start to decrease the new patient flow, knowing that I'm at a level of scale that will reach that. The other caveat I want to add here is, I do think there is a point where, when I talk about insurance, I primarily mean the majority of the big players in the market. I'm not advocating that you stay in network with all these insurances that you're basically losing money. I'm not telling you that you'd stay in Medicare or stuff like that. I'm advocating that there's reasonable reason to stay in network with the Blue Crosses, with the Deltas, with Cignas, you know, some maybe MetLife. You know, you start looking at the big players, there's a reason to potentially stay in with them. And if your practice is one of those practices that your insurance patients are high and your insurance collections relative to the practice is high, That's the problem. And so instead of starting to look at how do I get rid of insurances, what I want you to start to figure out is, and this is I think is the take home point, the overall take home point, is you need to go to your practice and you need to figure out how much of your collections is coming from insurance versus how much of your collections is coming from your practice. Because that's going to show you that, hey, I've got room to improve if my insurance collections is still a significant percentage of the practice collections. Because we've got to get to the point where that portion is still is a low enough number that you start to understand and realize that it's the at-bat that's worth the money, not the insurance themselves. I hope you enjoy this episode. Honestly, I just think it's a lot. It's a lot to take in. It's difficult to articulate this in a way that I want it to sometimes. I hope it landed the way that it was supposed to. If anything, I hope it generates conversation. I hope you listen to this and maybe have a follow-up question, want to talk about it. Please message me on Instagram at millennialdentist or shoot me an email at millennialdentist@gmail.com. But I would love to talk more about it because I think it's important. And again, I'm not here to pick on people. I'm not here to do anything but to challenge just the way of thinking and to hopefully help you grow your practice. That's what I want to do. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your day, wherever that may be. Work smarter, not harder. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.